Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Coming up on today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, fellow University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green and I, we discuss the possibility of Oklahoma and Texas jumping ship to the SEC, the Sooners nabbing another high school phenom quarterback, and Malachi Nelson. We get into who it benefits the most, how this affects Texas A&M, how a pod schedule might work in the SEC. Very SEC heavy on this episode, but also just like traditions in college football and this realignment craziness that is absolutely upon us once again. Remember, new episodes are available on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts every single day. The Chase Thomas Podcast is there. On the writing front, I read about last night's episode of AEW Dynamite that you can read at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. That's me. I'm Chase Thomas, the sports Renaissance man. It's free for now, so y'all just add your email to get each issue delivered to your mailbox every single morning. I like to think of it like a newspaper, something that I grew up reading, and I do have a journalism degree and getting another one here at UT. Think of it like a newspaper delivery to your front porch, but instead the hard copy and a variety of voices. It's a digital copy of just my own. Again, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com and the Chase Thomas Podcast on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Uncle Darren, let's roll.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Thursday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined, as I am every single Thursday, during the college football offseason. It's my good friend and fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. Nighthawks in the house once again.
You love to see the Nighthawks in the house. Do you rock any Nighthawk stuff on the weekly basis? What is your Nighthawk routine? Okay.
I really only have like one shirt honestly, at this point in my life, I feel like I only wear those t-shirts that are like super soft. You know what I'm talking about?
Not like
the dry fit. Just like they're always like that, like a heather kind of gray color or like, you know, that, I don't know, that textured kind of, they're just super soft. I think it's like a cotton polyester blend type thing. But it's like I have so many t-shirts that just through the years, but like those are the ones I rock all the time, and I only have like one North Georgia shirt that's like that super soft shirt. So but yeah, I got some shorts and some solid UNG. They have that you know that good logo that's like kind of the shield with the NG, UNG with the Nighthawk, you know?
Yes.
It's like the one like solid logo. All the other ones are kind of whatever to me. But yeah, it's got that logo on it. So this is quality basketball shorts.
Well, I got like a distinct, or like off in the distance, a shaded away UNG logo on this very podcast. Have you noticed it when you're looking at it?
No.
I wonder if other people.
What are you talking about? What, in your logo?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even notice the Nighthawk. I'll have to look for that.
Look and tell me if you can find it. It's a classic Where's Waldo situation.
your classic Where's Waldo.
Matt Green, what is new with you since we last spoke last week?
Oh, not much, man. Guys, shout out to my brother and his wife. They just adopted a newborn baby, so that's a huge news. Became a father, but you know, I'm just this week I've had solid picture in picture going all day with the work all week with the work laptop set up with the SEC media days on the personal laptop. So it's been solid. As far as just a week, random week in July goes, like just have college football talk all throughout the workday is pretty solid.
I feel like you and work days are not synonymous at the moment, because what you just outlined just screams to me a lot of company time being stolen, Matt Green.
Not at all, man. You know, usually you may have has your headphones in, like a podcast or something, you know, just on the background. Like, obviously I couldn't pay attention to everything that's being said during SEC media days, but some solid content just to be on in the background.
Who was your favorite? What was your favorite moment from SEC media days? Because I will confess, I've not watched any of it outside of Heupel stuff. I just heard that Shane Bieber smoked really fast. Like, that was a thing with him. I think Eli Drinkwitz said Twitter was not real.
Everyone loved Eli Drinkwitz. Yeah. I feel like he was making people die laughing. He's just like, he's just had that like kind of self-deprecating humor, you know? Like, yeah, that was probably, he was probably one of the funnier parts of SC Media Days, because he was talking about, they're like, oh yeah, you go to the grocery store and get recognized and everything. I'm sure people are always coming up to you. And he's like, look, people might be coming up to you guys. And then he's talking like Laura Rutledge and Roman Harper. He's like, I have what you call common face. He's like, people have no idea who I am. Like, it was pretty funny. Because he really does. He just looks like some guy with glasses. Like,
that is true. I would not, I guess, I don't, I would, I think I'd still just know too much about college football. I would be able to point him out, I would say. Like, I would pause because I would wonder why I'm seeing him there, but I do think I would recognize him. Like, I don't know.
But that would be one of those people. Like, I remember I saw a Georgia football player. I don't even remember the name, TJ Stripling. Super random, but, like, 4-star recruit. He never really played at Georgia, but I was at like Lake Lanier, like Memorial Day or something. I was like, dude, you're TJ Stripling, like 6'5", you know, black dude, like super long dreads. I'm like, super diesel. I'm like, I know who you are. He's like, no, I'm not. That's not who I am. I don't play for Georgia. You know, I guess just trying to like be low key or something. But it's like, if this guy told you, if you thought he was Eli Drinkwitz, he's like, what are you talking about? You'd be like, oh, I'm sorry to bother you, sir. Yeah, like, you just keep moving. You know what I mean? But some people will tell you, no, I'm not him. You're like, I'm pretty sure you're him.
There was a time. We'll move on after this, but I was at a Hawks game a few years ago. And this was post Wes Wilcox, Mike Budenholzer. Actually, no, I guess Mike Budenholzer was there, and he just had the president of basketball ops title. And Wes was like in his last year before he moved on. This was after Budenholzer got the whole president of basketball ops and like the dual role thing in Atlanta after Danny Ferry stuff. And he was like two rows up from where I was with a buddy of mine. And he could just, like, that's the thing about NBA general managers. Like, you could just hide out. Like, no one has any idea. Like, Alex Anthopoulos could absolutely go to a Braves game, like, sit wherever and no one, or I shouldn't say no one, but by and large, the majority of people will not recognize this man. And I think that's true for most front office types. But Wes, I recognized, and I just like, hey, what's up, Wes? And he, like, turned and was like extremely confused that someone had recognized him in the stands. And like people were asking me, they're like, who is that? And I'm like, that's the Hawks general manager, the guy like constructing this team that you're watching. He's right there. And they're like, oh, huh. And it was just this whole thing where I was like, oh, yeah. And he was completely taken aback by the fact that I recognized this man. And I was like, man, I got to get out more. I know too much. I know too much.
That's funny. Yeah, some of the other funny things in SEC Media Days, I don't know if you heard Kirby Smart talk about Quavo texted him as soon as like the NIL stuff happened. And he said, tell your players not to be thirsty. So to hear Kirby Smart say thirsty, I don't know, it was just kind of funny.
I don't think that text happened.
You don't think so? You think that's made up?
I think that's made up. I don't believe Quavo has Kirby's number. There's no way those two are texting back and forth. Kirby's
too busy. Why not? I mean, Kirby's always texting people, I'm sure. Like, he's always contacting. I feel like Quavo's big time. And, like, the Rose Bowl, like, he was super visible, like, on the sidelines. He's been on the sidelines, like, multiple Georgia games, like, in the locker room and stuff. So it's definitely possible. Like, I feel like famous people respect other famous people. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to give his number to you, but...
Whoa, but, shots
fired.
But
Quavo... Maybe one day. You are verified. But...
I don't want his number, though. I don't care. Like, none of these guys are really all that interesting that, like, I would love to have their number. Like, who would
actually
be interesting
beneficial
to talk to? Like, who do I want to text back and forth with?
No, of course. Of course. But Quavo is actually, like, you could have a professional relationship, like... Mm. Especially at this point, like, recruiting is everything. Like, just PR, just the fact that you could drop the little nugget that you're texting Quavo, I guess, is reason enough.
Here's what I think, actually.
But you think it's fake? You think it's phony?
No, I think Quavo reached out to the University of Georgia and, like, was talking to people around Kirby and was like, and Quavo was like, hey, tell Kirby he needs to get his guys, or he texted someone else that he knew, like on the team, maybe like one of the players or something, was like, hey, tell Kirby whatever the quote you just said was, like, I could see that where they like relayed the information back to him so that he could use it as a nugget at media day.
You just don't want to believe that Kirby is texting Quavo. You just don't think he's cool enough. What is it?
I don't know. It just seems too neat for me. To like, oh yeah, Quavo, the Atlanta super fan, texting with Kirby Smart. I don't know. I don't buy it. I'm gonna have to say I don't buy it. There's like, I don't even know, like, who. I guess there's only like one coach that I would actually like buy is doing that kind of stuff.
But Kirby's a young coach.
It's not about youth. It's about personality. It's about like what they get, what kind of energy they give off, and like what they're into, and. I don't know. I never got that. I never got that vibe from Kirby.
Hey, he's a hell of a recruiter. So mm-hmm. I'm sure he's vibing with everybody. You know, like that's got to be
vibing with everybody.
That's got to be half the battle, is just putting out a good vibe. I think that's why people don't like Dan Mullen. It's just like, this guy's just irritating. He's a goober. Like, I don't know how else to describe him. Like, I don't know.
Georgia fans, I just don't think are going to be healthy this year if Emory Jones is better than JT Daniels and Florida.
No, I don't think anybody's ready for, like, people talk about Emory Jones, like, he could be something, but I don't think anyone's truly ready for him to be, like, one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. Like, that's
right there. It would not
that would make Florida the surprise of the SEC by far. But, I mean, he has some ability. Like, yeah, he could be, like, a good player, but I'm saying if he's, like, elite, like, I don't know, like, for real, like, putting Florida in, like, national championship contention, like, that's going to shock everybody. Like, I mean, there's people like Phil Steele predicting Florida outside of the top 25. Like, there's people predicting, like, 9-3 seasons, like, that kind of thing. Like, I would just be shocked if Emory Jones is the best quarterback in the SEC. And I'm not as high on JT Daniels as other Georgia fans. Like, he was good. Like, I'm just one of those people, like, I don't think you have to have the elite quarterback to win a national championship. I think a lot of teams do, because a lot of teams just don't have elite rosters. But I think think it's possible to win a national championship with the quarterback just being a solid player. And I think, like, you saw Georgia, like, what they did, you know, not to make it all about Georgia, but to see what they did against Stetson Bennett, like, or with Stetson Bennett as the quarterback against Alabama, like, they were winning for almost three full quarters of that game until, like, the final minute or two of the third quarter when Alabama took the lead on that Jaylen Waddle touchdown. So it's like, Georgia's a loaded roster, and Stetson Bennett is, like, not even an SEC caliber quarterback. He might not be a Division I caliber quarterback. So if Jake Fromm was the quarterback on Georgia last season, like, just a solid quarterback, I think that team is significantly better, probably at least good enough to beat Florida, maybe still not going to beat Bama, but, like, I think, and JT Daniels, I'm not as high on everyone saying he's going to be a top 10 pick and all that, but I think he's just, if nothing else, he's definitely solid, and that's all Georgia really needs, like, a guy who can hit some receivers running downfield, and he showed he could do that last year.
What did he say? Because I heard someone was talking about, like, I'm ready to run through a brick wall based on what JT Daniels was saying in his media day. Did you listen to what he said?
Oh, I didn't hear, like, his actual, like when he was at the podium or anything, but I just saw a couple clips. He was just saying things like, I don't know, people hype him up because he just seems kind of like a cool customer, you know? He's like, you know, it's cool when people say good things about you, but it's also cool when people say you suck. And it's just like, I don't know, people just kind of like JT Daniels' vibe, I guess, the whole Cali thing. But I think he made some kind of he went on some kind of little talk. I'm going to butcher it, but just kind of some sort of team first mentality that I think it was like a good quote that a lot of people were hyping him up for.
Yes, because you know there's a lot of players going up to the podium and just saying, quote,
right,
I'm all about me.
Well, if the receivers catch the ball, I'm good enough to get the job done, all right? I don't know about everybody else. I don't know about the offensive line blocking, but I'm a baller.
Yeah, I don't think that would go well with your coach being there with you.
Like, I think that's what, like, maybe it just was the first day of media days, I think, when South Carolina went. But it felt like everyone was just so excited for Shane Beamer. Like, oh, this guy won the press conference. He's just such a good guy. I trust. And it's just like, cool. Like, you enjoyed him speaking. I guess you were just excited for, like, the event of SEC Media Days. But it's like, he hasn't done anything yet. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. South Carolina is not in win now mode. They got a long way to go.
Yeah, I heard he was speaking quite fast. Did you notice that? And someone pointed out, I think it was Andy Staples on his podcast this week, was like, the last person who was talking like Shane Beamer at SEC Media Day was Ron Zook. And people around the league were like, oh, he's in over his head. Like, he, like, nervous.
Oh, really? I didn't catch that. But, you know, I might not have been dissecting it as much as those guys were. But, yeah.
Really into it.
I felt like he was recruiting Oscar Delp so hard. Like, I think Eli Drinkwitz made a joke about that. He's like, well, I know that South Carolina's going to be throwing the ball to the tight end, so I'm just going to double the tight end every play. Because he was like, we're going to get the tight ends the ball. Like, because you've seen this, like, these South Carolina fans are, like, obsessed with Oscar Delp. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
Like, so he's the four-star tight end from West Forsyth. Like, he's, like, top 50 player in the country or so. He seems like a guy who's like a Georgia lock, to be honest. Like, but I guess he's got some sort of roots to South Carolina. His family, like, lived in Columbia or something like that. And, like, there's just South Carolina fans, hashtag we want Delp. Like, it's like a huge thing. And then, like, Georgia players started, like, hashtag Delp is a dog. Like, I've never seen people do hashtags, like, current players do hashtags, like, to recruit an uncommitted prospect. Like, I've never seen that. And he's not like this guy. We're not talking about Jadeveon Clowney or something. You know what I mean? Like, he's a big time prospect. Don't get me wrong. But it seems weird how obsessed the South Carolina fan base is for getting a four star tight end. I don't know.
It's a little things, right? Like, baby steps in this
process. I guess so. Just four stars. Just, you got a chance to get one and now you're excited, I guess.
Kirby shaking a little bit. Shane Beamer coming at him. Well, there was also some news that just happened it broke, I guess is the correct journalist way of framing it, Matt Green.
Now, news happens.
news happens. But yes, news did happen, Matt Green, because a report from the Houston Chronicle, everyone listening, I'm sure, is very aware at this point that OU and Texas reached out to the SEC. A lot of non-answers from SEC types. The only university that was openly like, this is bullshit was, you guessed it, Texas A&M. This was a stunner. I think, I don't know, we haven't, you and I, we've talked about so many different things college football-wise, but we hadn't really talked about like how soon expansion could pop back up. We just assumed that it would be like 2025 at the earliest. They would start addressing this, but...
Well, to be honest, I kind of thought the expanding of the playoff was almost like the market correction for the conference realignment and everything. It was like, okay, maybe conference realignment was a bad idea. We should have just kept all the conferences we had originally. We didn't really need to break them all up like this. Or I guess I should say combine them all. And so I feel like some of the conferences, like you've seen the ACC the last couple years, the Big 12 at times, like even the Big 10, I feel like the Big 10 is, I would say, a vastly superior to the other two, the Pac-12 has been weak, but you have such different, you know, strengths of schedules and all these teams, and at 130 teams in college football, you play 12 of them. So you really have no idea. We're all voting. We have no idea who the best teams are, but it seems like the best coaches and players are usually coming from the SEC, but obviously good players are spread around. So I felt like the playoff expansion was like, okay, well, we don't need to do anything else with the conferences. We'll let the champions get, you know, this advantage, but we're going to let other good teams get into the playoff and have a chance to win a title, because geography shouldn't decide if you get to play in the playoff or not. You know what I mean? And so I don't really understand why we're continuing to do the conference realignment, to be honest, unless we're on the way to some sort of, you know, a bunch of 16 team super conferences. And then if that's the case, like, we probably could have just kept it at a four or even 18 playoff.
Yeah, I think we're heading towards super conferences. I think what's going to happen is it's not going to be a Power Five. It's going to be a Power Four. And I don't know for sure if that's what happened, but like reading the tea leaves and reading different pieces and reading different people more in the know than myself, like, I don't know. I look at it and I don't see how it's not going that way. Like, I don't see how this is not going to end in that front, but it is interesting that the Big Ten's mostly going to be untouched by this, right? Like, that was something I was jotting down when I was thinking about this, because like with all the different moving pieces here in play, they're not affected at all, because I don't think anyone's moving in or out, and they're going to be fine regardless.
Well, but if we're going to 16-team conferences, then they've got to be adding two more.
Well, so I think they have to, is what I'm saying.
Well, if we're going to be 16 teams, they don't have 16 teams yet. You know what I mean? So right. I would think if we're going to do that, because that's how I was looking at it, was if these are all going to be 16-team conferences, once Oklahoma and Texas leave the Big 12, like there's not one program. And it also, does this happen in multiple sports, or is this just football? Like, how does that work?
But it hasn't happened yet, so we don't know how any of this works yet.
That's true. So the Big 12, I feel like for most people's opinion, will basically dissolve, right? Because they don't have any kind of big brands to carry that conference anymore. So if you have eight teams remaining after Texas and Oklahoma leave, and you need the ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12 to all get to 16, that's eight more teams right there. So they could all collectively, they could just take the remaining Big 12 teams and have them just split up. So I took the liberty of what teams would go to which conferences, right? So the Pac-12 would have to add four teams. The Big Ten would have to add two teams, and the ACC would have to add two teams. So I feel like West Virginia seems like a no-brainer to the ACC. But also, you get that Dallas-Fort Worth market, get TCU in there too. So the ACC gets TCU and West Virginia. The Big Ten, they already got Iowa. Give them Iowa State. And then I feel like Oklahoma State, since Oklahoma already left them, give them Oklahoma State too. And then that would leave Baylor, Texas Tech, Kansas, and Kansas State going to the Pac-12. What are your thoughts? And then you got Notre Dame thrown in there. So Notre Dame could jump in there and fuck everything up. What are your thoughts on that, though?
Give me your – who's going to the Big Ten again?
Iowa State and Oklahoma State.
I would probably flip Oklahoma State to the Pac-12 and put Kansas in the Big Ten.
Okay, I could see that. And then you're splitting up Kansas and Kansas State. The only thing is, like, the Pac-12 has, like, such a vibe, right? Mm-hmm. And none of the Big 12 schools really, like, fit the Pac-12's vibe. You know what I mean? It's just, like, that middle America versus the coastal elites, if you will. Like, I don't know. I wonder if the Pac-12 even have any interest in any of these teams. And you also, like, I don't really understand how they make the decisions on conferences, right? Because we think about everything geographically. Like, oh, Central Florida, they would fit right into the ACC. That would make sense. But then, you know, there's all these politics that are involved of, oh, these teams don't want them in the ACC. Because I heard someone mention that there's some sort of clause that, like, Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina have all agreed to of, like, there's never going to be another SEC team in those team states. Like, it's something they've, like, agreed on. And, like, So Texas A&M, I guess, isn't part of that. Like, I don't understand that exactly. So, because that's 100% the number one advantage Texas A&M has over Texas. Like, I heard Greg McElroy talking about it today because he's a Texas guy. And he talks about, like, you know, you think Texas A&M, you think Texas. They just go hand in hand. And he's like, but, you know, in today's world, like, you think college football, you think Texas A&M, you really don't think about Texas anymore. Like, they've come out of their shadow and they're in the SEC. Like, they've been a better football program than them for a solid, like, 7 or 8 years now. Like, so they're 100% going to be the one that wants to veto this the most. But how much weight does Texas A&M really carry as being, like, kind of one of the new kids on the block in the SEC?
Well, it's also just not about football. They're not doing this for football on the field reasons and how good of a football team you're putting out every year. It's just the Longhorn Network and Texas. Like, they just see the money signs. Like, that's all it is. Like, A&M has been a great get for the SEC, but if it comes down to money, like, just the brand of Texas is always going to be the bigger than the brand of Texas A&M. But something I was thinking about too, and I don't know if McElroy spoke to this, but, like, we've talked about this, and people I've talked to from InsideTexas.com and Barking Carnival and all that stuff, just the Texas people that I know, where it's like the boosters run that school and the boosters make that job so difficult. That's the reason Texas is not Alabama. It's just all the politics and all the craziness that goes on behind the scenes. Just Greg Sankey, where the SEC is such a well-run machine right now, where everybody gets along for the most part. ADs all work together. They keep it moving. They're basically the leaders of college football. If you bring in these Texas boosters and you bring in this Texas culture, I don't know if they're going to play well with others because they are so conditioned to having their own way and running the Big 12 and the Big 12 just being their place, even if they're not dominating on the field. It's still just when you think Big 12, you still think Texas. And then from the OU side of things, there is, like, they have it made quite nicely in the Big 12, running the gauntlet, getting five-star, like, they just got another five-star quarterback, Malachi Nelson, coming in there. You got Spencer Rattler, you get the transfer, you get the Kyler Murray's, everything. Lincoln's got a great thing going in the Big 12, but you throw them in the SEC West, and suddenly, they're not going to the playoff anymore. Suddenly, they're the third or fourth team most years in that conference, and they lose their luster. They look more like Arkansas and less like the Oklahoma that we've just come to know. And I wonder, from their perspective, is it worth the money if it damages what we look like and what we can actually accomplish? And I think that goes up and down the board in the SEC, because if you add Texas and OU, It makes life worse for Kentucky. It makes life worse for Missouri. It makes life worse for Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Arkansas, where you just added two programs that have more resources, more money, more avenues to success than you do. So you already were backed up against the eight ball against Georgia, Bama, LSU. And now it's going to get worse. Now, there was already a slim chance you were going to be able to run this gauntlet in the SEC, but now it gets worse. And now it's not even like you can bet on 7-5, 8-4 most years. It's back down to losing records. It's back down to 500 at best. And
there's a lot of
afterthought. Is that all fair?
I mean, I could definitely see that. Because those teams, like, there's the bottom half of the SEC, I think, is weaker the last 5 years than it was the previous 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like I think the expansion of the SEC really hurt the bottom of the conference. At least seems worse than it once was. But this is so interesting because it's gonna settle so many like hypothetical Twitter debates that never get settled. It's just people arguing at each other. Oh, if Oklahoma's in the SEC, oh, they go 8-4 every year. You know what I mean? Because Oklahoma is one of those programs that, like, I feel like they have an elitist vibe about them. You know what I mean? Like they know they're one of the blue bloods of college football, and they kind of turn their nose up at anyone that isn't a blue blood. You know what I mean? But with what Oklahoma, it's been a while since Oklahoma has won national championship. And there's been so many of these big games that they've lost in recent history that just a lot of the other fans don't hold Oklahoma in as high regard as they hold themselves. So it would be really interesting because I think Texas A&M, like, I think I know that was a jab like Bob Stoops took at the SEC years ago was, you know, A&M and Missouri weren't doing too great in our conference, and they go over to the SEC and they just start balling right away. You know, I don't think Bob Stoops said they start balling right away, but you know what I mean? But I think for one, Texas A&M just got super lucky, just the stars aligning and Johnny Manziel being on their roster the first year of the SEC really just kind of started them in with a bang. And then Missouri winning the division 2 times. But I think just being in the SEC elevated both of those programs. It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know what I mean? Like just being in the SEC gave them more cachet with recruits and everything. And A&M is a better program and easily a better program than they were 10 years ago. And it's because they're in the SEC. So if Oklahoma comes to the SEC, they could see an equal jump and they could also become dominant.
Yeah. I don't know. I lean more towards the pessimistic viewpoint on that.
I mean, Texas, though, like,
Texas has nothing to lose.
Texas has been struggling in the Big 12, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think they've made one Big 12 championship in the last, like, 4 or 5 years. Like, so they haven't even been doing well in that conference. Like, Texas is the one that could come in with a rude awakening. Like, first year in the SEC, do something like 5-7, and you're like, holy shit, like, there's like six good teams on your schedule. Like, what is that about? What's that?
What's Texas's record against the University of Georgia in the last 5 years?
It's probably 1-0.
It is 1-0. Would you say that Texas is undefeated against Georgia in our lifetime?
Oh, man, that's probably true. Mm. I know my mom went to, like, the Cotton Bowl in like 1980 something, and like they won 10-9. Georgia won 10-9. It was like a big deal.
Wow.
10-9. Yeah, those are the good old days.
The good old days when,
because I think it was like such a big deal too. Like, that's how big important the bowl games were. It's like it was just the Cotton Bowl, you know, but like everyone took so much pride in it. It was like a phrase that like the time of day, it's always 10-9 in Texas or something like that. Like, Georgia fans said it like for years, like old Georgia fans. Mm. That's a boomer, maybe a boomer generation Georgia fan.
Boomer sooner, if you will. Who do you think benefits more by joining the SEC? Do you think it's Oklahoma or do you think it's Texas? And I'm not just talking about on the field. I'm talking about the brand as a whole, the university as a whole. Who benefits more between the two of them?
I think it's Texas, because Oklahoma doesn't need anything. Like, Oklahoma, like, they need to take the next step as like a program and like win one of these like college football playoff games or something. But like, everyone respects the brand that is Oklahoma. You know what I mean? Like Heisman winners, like playoff appearances, like just national recognition. Like Oklahoma is big time. Like Texas is like desperately clinging to being big time. They're like the person that has to convince you they're cool. You know, it's like, if you're cool, everyone will know you're cool. You don't have to convince people you're cool. You know, like Texas is just clinging to their history, and they just, I don't know. And like you said, the boosters and everything, the last two coaches only getting like 4 years apiece, like it's becoming like a toxic kind of job. So Texas definitely, I think just being in the SEC, it's kind of like an equalizer there with Texas A&M. It could maybe make them the flagship, the destination college football school again in the state. Because right now, like a big time recruit from Texas, like it seems like they're going to A&M before they're going to Texas. Like, so I think Texas definitely has way more to gain. But also the Longhorn Network, I think they said that's like they can't do that if they join the SEC. I think they have to essentially like give that up. Like, I don't know how that works, but
well, it'd be a seamless fit. I mean, you just dissolve it into the network, because I think the Longhorn Network and
into SEC3 or something.
Well, no, they're both owned by Disney, so they just probably cross-pollinate or just like integrate a bunch of Longhorn Network stuff into the SEC Network umbrella.
That's fair.
I bet you a lot wouldn't change there. Also, the Longhorn Network hasn't done well. So, you're not.
I've never watched the Longhorn Network, so I don't know. I don't know where to find it.
Yeah,
but if you
see, like, trying to find a Pac-12 game
or ACC Network, I think I didn't have it on my cable.
I can't say that because I watch a lot of ACC Network during the day in the background. I'm not gonna lie, they have a lot of good college games on there.
And oh, is that right?
Yeah, and they do some old ACC classic football games that I like.
I just don't like that Mark Richt has become like the face of ACC Network. Like, he's an SEC guy, man. Like, I know he played at Miami, a coordinator at Florida State, and then obviously had like what, 3-4 years coaching at Miami, but he was at Georgia for 15 years. I just don't like him seeing him on the ACC Network. It's not right.
I mean, the majority of his life was
ACC. Yeah, Gene Chizik over on the SEC Network. All due respect to Gene Chizik. Like, Mark Richt, way better coach than Gene Chizik. Like, well, obviously, Gene Chizik got the natty.
I was
going
to say, speaking of Texas to Georgia,
he also got fired like a year later.
Yeah.
But you saw the schedule proposal, right? So the pod
into your Bill Connolly anger session, because
Bill Connolly stole my tweet.
He didn't.
No, he did.
Because Bill Connolly has been banging his gavel since football study hall on this. Like, I remember reading this 10 years ago on footballstudyhall.com. Like, this has been his thing. And he's a Mizzou guy. But
hey, I tweeted at 11:27 a.m. and he tweeted at 11:47 p.m. So I think that's proof that he stole my idea. But it's funny because I feel like we both got to it in the same way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, my friend hit up our group text and was like, oh, you see this 4-team pod proposal. And for those people who don't know, they have essentially, this is with Oklahoma and Texas being added. They've broken up the SEC into 4 pods. Yeah, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina in 1, Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Texas A&M in 1. And then the last one is Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas. And so you play everyone in your pod every season, and then you play 2 games against the other 3 every year. And so ultimately you're going to play every team home and home in a 4-year period. And I feel like I have been saying this for so long, ever since they expanded the SEC, like, we had to do something about the schedule. You need to play every team home and home in a 4-year period. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Bill Connolly, he saw, I don't know, not 100% sure who tweeted this out. Maybe Pete Thamel or someone like that, some sort of national writer tweeted this out, and then he commented like, oh no, he had a better idea. And that's exactly how I was with my friends. Like, that looks good, but I would rather people just have like 3 locked rivals for like rivalry and tradition purposes. You know, you just like seeing Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, and South Carolina in the same pod, like that means you're not getting Georgia Auburn every year. You're not getting Florida LSU every year. You're not getting Florida Tennessee every year. Like, some of these games you have to have every year. They're just huge rivalries, right? Like, you're not getting Alabama LSU every year with this system. So I proposed basically the same idea, but everyone has three locked rivals, but they're just a different three teams, obviously. And then you play the other, and then that it's a 9-game conference schedule. So with those three games, locked rivals, then there's 12 remaining teams. You play 6 of them 1 year, 6 of them the next year, 6 the next year, 6 the next year. And then you're playing everyone home and home in a 4-year span. So I don't know if you see these locked rivalries I have, if you have any thoughts on any of them. Like, you have Georgia playing Florida, Auburn, South Carolina every year. You got Alabama playing Auburn, LSU, Tennessee every year. So you get to preserve some of these rivalries, like Arkansas, Missouri, and you also have Arkansas, Texas every year. Like, I think this would be an awesome way to keep some of those rivalries that we need. Like, you're going to lose some of them, right? Because it's inevitable. Like, as a Georgia fan, not seeing Georgia, Tennessee, that's just seems weird. You got to play Tennessee every year. But ultimately, to have a cohesive conference where everyone is playing everyone, that's what you're going to have to do. And honestly, it might make Georgia, Tennessee a bigger deal because they play it every other year. You know what I mean? Like, LSU Auburn, I feel like, was one of the better rivalries that I was unable to keep in this system. But LSU, you got A&M, Alabama, and Florida every year. And you're obviously going to have some of the better teams are going to have some tougher, more difficult locked rivalries. Like, you feel like A&M, LSU, Texas, and Oklahoma every year. But I mean, when you're playing the other six conference games, just subbing those out every year, it's going to balance out. And I just feel like right now, just the schedules are just way too lopsided. Like, if you look at some years, Georgia's schedule, I think this year in particular, especially if Florida is down, like we all kind of assume they will be, Auburn's on a first year head coach, and maybe Florida's like the 20th ranked team or something. You know, maybe they're a 3-loss team or something. They're not bad, but they're just not, you know, a top 10 opponent. Like, Georgia has Clemson to open the season with, and, you know, might not have another really like elite level game the rest of the season. Whereas you look at someone like Auburn, they play A&M, they play Alabama, they play LSU, they play Georgia. Like, these schedules are just so, and they actually have to go to Penn State too. These schedules are just so lopsided. Like, we have to do something about just evening these schedules a little bit. Like, the fact that there's so few, there's only the one locked rivalry, it just makes Tennessee, their schedule so ridiculous. When I was writing for FanSided a few years back, I wrote this article about Tennessee's schedule, about how they just got royally screwed like every year, because obviously they play Alabama every year. So they just automatically just have.
Well, let me stop you right there. So this is funny that you bring that up, because that is a buddy of mine. When I was telling him about this, I was like, hey, did you see the Texas stuff? And he was concerned, excited early, but then he like pulled me later and was like, this means we might not have to play Alabama every year. And it's like one of those things where you just, the light bulb goes off. And I think this was probably the case for every Tennessee fan, because I think if you're an outsider, you might wonder, or you might just be like, yeah, it's a rivalry. It happens the third Saturday of October. It's just something you do. But if you ask any Tennessee fan, if they would give that up for more of a round robin schedule, every single Tennessee fan is okay giving up playing Alabama every year. No one's dying to keep that on the docket just because it is a rivalry game. And then I think about like your team. Texas A&M has been in the Big 12 or in the SEC for how many years now? 8? What is it?
Yeah, this was the 9th season this past year. Okay.
How many times has Georgia gone to College Station?
Yeah, not once.
Like, that's, I mean, insane.
Last year was the 9th year, it took their 8th year in the conference for us to actually play. And Georgia and A&M actually played in the, what was it? What is that bowl? It's like Independence Bowl, maybe? I don't know. Back in like 2009, Joe Cox. But so it was like the, they've been in the same conference for almost a decade and they still hadn't played is kind of ridiculous. Like, they're essentially not in the same conference.
And this is only a college football thing. Like, college baseball and college basketball, you play everybody. Like, this is not a not an issue for other sports. But
well, and Georgia and Alabama. Georgia went to Alabama, went to Tuscaloosa in 2007 and then went again in 2020. Like, 13 years apart. Like, that's absurd. Like, they... Georgia should be playing in Tuscaloosa once every 4 years, at the very minimum.
I would,
but it wasn't just that. But yeah, like,
well,
Tennessee has
that.
To.
I
play.
Think it would be more of an experience if they had it in Charlotte, at Bank of America, so they kick off College Game Day.
Bryant Denny Stadium's great, but Nissan Stadium that would be way better, right? But yeah, it was like Tennessee. So obviously, it's lopsided. Like, I think what I did, like, the data I did was just, like, the cross-division team's record over, like, a 10-year span or something. And Tennessee was just absurdly higher than everybody. Obviously, one was because of Alabama, but it was, like, just the unluckiness of their of the rotation. It's, like, the year they play LSU, it's, like, LSU is, like, number one or something. The year they played Texas A&M was really good. I think they played Auburn Cam Newton's year. You know, it's just, like... It was just the most unlucky schedule ever, and mainly because of the Alabama thing. So, unfortunately, in my situation or in my scenario, I'm still keeping that third Saturday in October. You got to keep Tennessee, Alabama. But the fact that Florida and Georgia are also going to be playing Alabama every other year, it's like, okay, well, then I'm not that mad because everyone is playing everyone. You know what I mean? So I had Tennessee playing Florida, Vanderbilt, and Alabama every year. Like, that seems like the three games Tennessee has to play. Like, Vanderbilt, you got Tennessee, Kentucky, and Missouri. That's a little bit easier than A&M having to play LSU, Texas, and Oklahoma. But Vanderbilt's also going to have six other conference games both years, and that schedule is going to get a lot tougher. But it's just preserving some of these rivalries is what we – is what we have to do. Even if we're expanding, doing all these different things in college football, it's kind of ridiculous how many changes are all happening at once. Like, we don't have a control variable, right? Like, to know which of these things change the landscape of college football. It's like, well, was it everyone getting paid, or was it the transfers? What, you know, it's like, was it the conference realignment? Like, you have no idea.
Did I have that on the list? Because this was something I wanted to pick your brain about too, was if... Yeah, I have this down here because, like, I was thinking about this today, and this is something that I think where Twitter is not a good indicator of, like, really anything. But when you talk to normal people, they're just like, they're in over their head. Like, if you're a casual college football fan, you're keeping up with this and you're seeing these headlines and you're like, wait, what, who's where, what, why? Like, it's overwhelming, I think, to have this much change. And I think this is just the nature of where we are as a society, because I'm generally speaking how do I frame this? I bat a curious eye when the elderly complain about kids today or things like that. And I think it's just part of the aging process, as everyone thinks that their generation was better than the other one, or this, that, and the other. But what I do think is true is that things are changing way faster every year now than it ever did for previous generations. Where, like, things were just the same basically from the 80s to the 90s. Like, a lot of stuff was, like, college football was relatively unchanged. The NFL was relatively unchanged. And we didn't have these just monumental changes all avalanche at once. And I think it's kind of overwhelming for casual fans, and it's kind of overwhelming for me, where I'm like, man, you know, one of the beautiful things about college football is that it's not I think pure is a little too naive, but, like, I know what I'm getting. I know, like, it, I know what kind of rivalries are happening. I know who hates who. I know that these guys are here and this means this for this team. Like, I worry about how much is changing so quickly that, like, we're losing just the fun nature of it just being this thing that we just know. It's like that good trusty jacket that we all like to rock in the fall. It's just like, it's just there. You like to know that it's there. And now you like in a couple years, we're going to look at college football sidelines and we're going to be like, I don't really recognize this sport as much as I did. And it's not like it is for older people where it was like, they might feel that way after 50 years. We're going to feel that way after two.
Well, yeah. And the SEC with the whole, you know, it just means more and everything. I feel like that's why Texas and Oklahoma, everyone hears that. And it's like, honestly, bring it on. Like Texas, Oklahoma, I feel like they fit right in with like that culture that is the SEC, you know, like every 10 of the teams in the conference think they should be winning the national championship every year. You know, it's like, that's obviously not how it works, but you're going to see some of these other conferences, you know, just because you have to take somebody, you're just going to see fits that are just weird. You know, it's already weird seeing West Virginia playing in the Big 12. Like, you know, maybe if they move to the ACC, like that'll kind of make more sense just to your brain geographically. But like, even like Nebraska had all these regional rivalries with Oklahoma and Colorado. And now Nebraska is just this irrelevant program kind of in the middle of the country, almost in no man's land, you know, like literally. And it has to have hurt Nebraska's brand, even if the fans are still showing up and packing out the stadium. There's no real like energy around any games that Nebraska plays anymore. You know what I mean? It's like they play Ohio State, like, oh, that's a big game, but Ohio State's going to murder them for one. And Ohio State has no animosity towards Nebraska, right? It's like, I wish we could like make some trades after all this is said and done. Like, can we bring Maryland back to the ACC? You know what I mean? Like, Maryland is irrelevant in the Big Ten and they just don't fit. And I feel like if you get in the wrong conference, you have the risk of just kind of just destroying your brand because you're with a bunch of teams and you're not in their geographical area. So they don't really care about you and they don't care about the rivalry or anything. Like Missouri, I think, had the fortune of winning the SEC East when they did. Like that was what, their second and third year in the SEC. Then it just kind of legitimized them right off the bat. And whereas someone like Maryland has gone to the Big Ten, you know, they've had a couple good basketball teams here and there, but like they're just, Nebraska and Maryland just don't fit in the Big Ten. And if you just see more games like this, like I always joke with like my friends, like, oh, yo, this is just your classic Big Ten matchup of Nebraska and Rutgers. You know, like yeah. You just see so many of these games, they're just like, this doesn't fit. Like sports fans, they can accept change, but they just need some sort of tradition to know, like these teams playing, they don't like each other. This makes sense to me. Like, Tori always jokes. We had this like running joke with us. Like, we saw Michigan and Wisconsin playing one time, and she's like, "They must hate each other, right?" And I was like, "I mean, I guess like it's not like a historic rivalry or anything, but." I'm sure it's like Georgia, Tennessee or something. I'm sure Michigan and Wisconsin have some beef or whatever. But now, if there's any time I see Michigan and Wisconsin playing, I'm like, uh-oh, it's the biggest rivalry in all of college sports, Michigan, Wisconsin. So, but you just need some of those rivalries, some of those regional matchups that make sense. And I feel like that's what we're losing. And it's obviously because of money and getting the TV revenue and expanding the markets and all of that. That type of stuff, but we just you can't make people not familiar enough to know what they're watching.
I'm excited to see what the NIL continues to do. Did you see the Bryce Young already over $1 million in endorsements?
I've heard that.
That's wild.
He hasn't even played it. He hadn't even started a game.
I mean, this is bad news for the G League Ignite, I think. That will not last long with these rules. I think if that was the main reason guys were not going to Syracuse and UNC and stuff anymore in Kansas, and now college basketball, which I mean, not even close to college football in terms of the level of behind the scenes, shadiness that, now is going to be at the forefront. So I'm excited to see the best prospects go back to college, even if it is just for a year, but I think,
well, and it's also one recruit just makes such a bigger difference in basketball. Like, just you get two or three guys, like you got a championship roster. Like, a college football class, if you get two or three of the top 10 players in the country, that's amazing. But you still need 20 more recruits in that class.
I don't know. I think Cam Miller is going to be enough for Tennessee next year.
You think so? That's all they need?
4-star out of Memphis. Duke can smoke. Jerry Mack putting in work in West Tennessee, sir. Final.
Hold on, Jerry Mack.
Yeah, Jerry Mack's the running backs coach. UT.
Oh, I thought you were hitting me in basketball there. Jerry McNamara. I was like, wait, where is Jerry McNamara? What, did I miss something?
I think is he not on the Syracuse staff?
I assumed he was still on the Syracuse staff, yeah. But I thought you were talking about Tennessee. You were throwing me off.
To wrap up, put a bow on the OU Texas stuff. What is your gut telling you, Matt Green? What do you think ultimately happens here? This is your chance to be clairvoyant, Matt Green. It is Thursday, July 22nd, 2021. What do you think ultimately happens with OU Texas expansion and all that?
I mean, I think it sounds like it's a done deal, honestly. Like, it sounds like OU and Texas are definitely joining the SEC. Like, it's like that. I heard there was a Big 12 conference call with other 8 teams that they weren't on. Like, that's pretty damning evidence right there. But I think ultimately we're going to have to see, you know, we're going to see more conference realignment. And I think it's going to be, you know, 4, 5, 16 team conferences, because we didn't even really touch on any of the other conferences. Like, we'd really just talked about the potential of the Big 12.
I think we need less conference realignment and more conference. What is the inverse of realignment? Dealignment, because I just made up a word on this podcast. But like what we talked about, we're sending Maryland back to the ACC, sending Nebraska back to the Big 12. Maybe that's the solution if you lose Texas.
Also, what happens to Notre Dame? Like, Notre Dame couldn't be more. They're literally in the exact geographic center of the Big Ten. Like, it's insane. But they're going to join the ACC. I think they have to pay some, like, massive fine if they don't join the ACC. Like, there's some sort of contract they have. Is if they join a conference, like, it has to be the ACC or else it's some huge fine. So, like, Notre Dame, if we're doing all this crazy realignment, Notre Dame has to join a damn conference. Like, it's absurd that they're still doing this, honestly. Like, it really is. But, like, BYU, like...
Well, the reason BYU is not a Big 12 school right now is because of Texas.
It's because of the Mormon thing?
Well, yeah, Texas,
like,
was
Texas
not...
didn't want... See, that's what I was going to say was going to hold BYU.
Mormon, like, to be careful here, like, I think it's just, like, the values. And, like, I think it was an LGBTQ issue, too, within the faith and within Texas. But, yeah, the reporting on that was that Texas was opposed to the Cougs making the jump. But BYU really does feel like a Big 12 school. Like, that's one, like, they should call us. Like,
well, but then I would think Pac-12 just because of where they are.
No, I wouldn't think Pac-12 because of their offense, and I just think about traditionally, like, I would get more of a Big 12 vibe. I think Boise State is more of a Pac-12 vibe.
See, but does geography not mean anything to you, though? Like, no. See, that's my number
UCF
one thing.
UCF and USF definitely.
I'm trying to keep everyone together. Like,
well, no, I look
Boise
at the
State, Boise State,
and
BYU
more,
need to go to the Pac-12.
Well, no, I think it's more of like, do I see scenarios where you can get some tradition and some fun stuff there? And I think BYU against the Texas schools and BYU, like, I think that would be fun, and I think that would be interesting. And BYU doesn't really have any strong ties, and if they can keep Utah on the schedule, that's great. And like you said, they do have more like Utah being the, what is it, the holy war. I think obviously there's a reason to do that, but I could just see Boise just becoming like, Boise has a lot more opportunity to like build a rivalry against Washington, Oregon. Like, we already know about their history with the little Garrett Blunt punch. Like, they're, I just think of schools like where there's more upside to putting them in the conference, and like where if they have any past stuff. I don't know. I think BYU fits more there. And I think Houston is just the one that's been sitting there. I don't really understand why Houston never joined. If like you're going to put Baylor and TCU in, but not Houston. I never really got that, especially how big that school is and everything. But and then Cincinnati, we haven't even mentioned, is the other one I would call. That was a big 12.
Yeah, I was going to say Cincinnati and UCF, like where does UCF go?
Well, I think if you're the Big 12, you keep expanding. Now you go to 16. You build your own super conference no matter what. You add all the AAC schools who are ready to jump ship and dissolve the AAC.
See, but I think the Big 12, see, I think the opposite would happen. I think the Big 12, once OU and Texas leave, and then maybe a couple other ones jump ship, like they have to keep everyone in order to keep that conference. And everyone in that Big 12, they just don't seem, I don't know, it just doesn't seem as cohesive without Texas and Oklahoma. So I feel like you could see one or two other teams moving somewhere else. And then ultimately, the teams remaining in the Big 12 having to join like Conference USA or not Conference USA, AAC. Because I mean, the AAC is at 11 teams. So, I mean, they could become one of these super conferences for all we know. Like they could add five teams, you know, they could add TCU and Texas Tech and Kansas and Kansas State or something like that. And even a Cincinnati. Oh, wait, AAC already has Cincinnati. But yeah. You know what I'm saying? And they could become like one of the power five conferences. Like I feel like that would have, just because the AAC would be on better standing, like they're not gonna dissolve their conference to try to join this dying Big 12 conference. Like I think the Big 12 is just, I think it's just inevitable that all these teams are eventually gonna leave, go somewhere else. And maybe a strong like core of them join one conference or something like that, but it doesn't, I don't see the Big 12. And honestly, we just need to get rid of it because they haven't had 12 teams in years. And the Big 10 hasn't had 10 teams in years. It's just confusing. Let's just get rid of that. Go to the AAC. I don't know. That's how I see it.
All right. Well, that is all I've got, Matt Green.
That's all I got, man.
That was a long pause.
That was a real long pause. It was
long.
I didn't know if you were waiting on me to say something.
Well, I was waiting to see if you had anything to.
Nah, I'm
just not going to jump in there. I'm excited no matter what. It's just more stuff, and the college football season's right around the corner. We, as I expected, were going to go long on this subject matter, so I wanted to make sure that we gave the Pac-12 and our preview series that's soon to follow the time and attention that it deserves. So we will start next week our preview series with the Pac-12. Some call it the Oregon State Beavers Conference. Others call it the Kyle Whittingham Invitational.
Nobody calls it that. But we're 44 days away from college football. So get your hard hats on.
There you go.
Strap up the laces.
Matt Green, always a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
All right, folks. That'll be it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas podcast. I appreciate each and every one of y'all for sticking around for another one. If you could be so kind and please do read my work at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com, and please do leave a 5-star rating and a review if you listen to this episode via Apple Podcasts. Follow me on the usual social media suspects, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. You can find me there, Twitter at @Chase_Thomas, Facebook at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter, or on Instagram at @Chase_Thomas as well. And give me a shout via email at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com to participate in any future mailback opportunities. So yeah, just email me if you have any questions for the show, for me, for any of my many co-hosts, and if you want to be a part of the mailback. But yeah, give me some sports questions or life questions, whatever. There it is, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail. I want to hear from y'all. I promise these little things really do matter. I promise. I'll leave you with Mr. Feeney's closing words: dream, try, do good. All right, y'all come back now. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast, hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.